Welcome to a Tales from the South Encore presentation. From January of 2013, here's Tin Roof Project number 27 with Ann Talman. Cats meow, dogs bow wow. Well, she's everything that a country boy would need. Well, look here, boy, she's staring back at me.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by the Salty Dogs? Y'all like the Salty Dogs? Hailing from Little Rock, Arkansas, the Salty Dogs have shared the stage with Willie Nelson, Kinky Friedman, Hank Williams Jr., and Junior Brown. The Salty Dogs have received kudos from Deke Dickerson to Jason Ringenberg, and their music has been featured on the TLC network hit show Trading Spaces. They have CDs for sale after the show, and more can be heard at thesaltydogs.net. All right, well, welcome to Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and to a special edition of Tales from the South, a monthly series we call the Tin Roof Project, where well-known Southerners bring their own true stories to life. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library, all right here in North Little Rock, Arkansas. And I'm your host, Paula Morrell. On my left here, strumming his 1931 national resonator, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Mark was a featured house guitarist at the late bluesman Junior Kimbrough's Juke Joint in Tullahoma, Mississippi. He wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here? Y'all like our set? These genuine screen doors from the Arkansas Delta with mixed media portraiture are by esteemed Arkansas artist V.L. Cox from her Images of the American South collection. A portion of the proceeds from the sale of these works goes to Tales from the South. More can be seen at her website, greatfineart.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern style storytelling? Originally from West Virginia, Ann Talman is currently a four-time Broadway actress, having worked extensively in theater, film, and television. Among her television credits are guest spots on Seinfeld, Murphy Brown, Law & Order Special Victims Unit, Ellen, Whoopi, The Education of Max Bickford, Love & War, Kate & Allie, HBO's Breast Men, and Nurse Rebecca Chase for a year on General Hospital, currently in witness protection. She portrayed Martin Sheen's daughter in a CBS Movie of the Week and was a regular on the show The Street, which starred Stanley Tucci and Michael Beach. She can be seen in Serendipity starring John Cusack, Limitless starring Robert De Niro and Bradley Cooper, and the upcoming Archaeology of a Woman starring Sally Kirkland. Anne holds a BA in theater and film from Pennsylvania State University. She is a life member of the Ensemble Studio Theater in New York, currently serves on its board, and is a founding member of the New Group Theater. Anne is also a member of the Writers Block in Los Angeles, co-founded the Ensemble Studio Theater, the LA Project Playwrights Unit, and is a founder of that theater. Her one-act play, Grandma's Rolls, was presented as a stage reading in 1996 by Ensemble Studio Theater, the LA Project. Ann Talman resides in New York City and Charlottesville, Virginia, where her husband, Dr. Charles A. Holt, chairs the Department of Economics at the University of Virginia. Tonight, Ann Talman takes us back to her childhood and the meaning of a word in adrenaline. Ladies and gentlemen, Ann Talman.
I cantered into the kitchen, pretending to be a Pegasus from Disney's Fantasia, which had just come out. I was home from first grade with a new word, which I learned during phys ed when our gym teacher said I had a lot of it in dodgeball. Mom, what's adrenaline? Mr. Lindstrom says I have it. I asked while jumping up and down like a human pogo stick on steroids. It's a wonder I never got a brain bleed. Ian, just a minute, for heaven's sake. Let me get this cake in the oven, and no, you may not lick the bowl. You'll get fat and never be a famous actress. Sit still now and hush. Daddy'll be home soon, you hear? No more jumping. My cake will fall. Now, I'm sure Mr. Lindstrom was exaggerating, though I do declare you likely have an overabundance of it in dodgeball. It's a wonder he can keep track of you. Lord knows I can't. Adrenaline, Ann, not adrenaline, use proper words, please, is a juice in the body that in times of great danger shoots through your veins to help you do something you would never have the strength to do otherwise. It can help you feel no pain so you don't suffer. And sometimes in war or nature, they call it fight or flight. It can give you the superpower to fight to save yourself or to flee more quickly to safety. Like Superman? I exclaimed. Well, sort of, but real life, Anne, not just pretend, she replied. People have been known to lift cars off trap folk because of it, and during the war when the Yankees were invading, one of your great-great-aunties, Rosa or Mamie or Willow, I can't remember which, lifted a trunk of silver and threw it out the second-story window all by herself. Next day, it took 6 men to fetch it. Ann Tallman, will you please stop picking your nose right this instant? It'll make your nostrils big and you won't be a movie star. Now, I know that Daddy says it's just a jag, but I am about ready to trade you in for green stamps. It's a wonder your head doesn't just cave in. Do you want to hear about adrenaline or not? Now, sit up. Hands to your side, here. Better yet, sit on them, here. Yes. Yes, what? Yes, ma'am, I droned. Mother, in Pittsburgh, no one else in first grade going into second has to say ma'am like me. It's so old-fashioned. It most certainly is not old-fashioned. It's refined, you hear? Now, I have a story of adrenaline about your brother Woody when we lived in West Virginia, before we moved to Pittsburgh, when Daddy was super of the Gary Lynch Coal District, when I had the back surgery up here, before you even came along, Lord help us. It helped brother do something he could never do otherwise. 'Cause he's crippled, right, Mom? Ann, brother has cerebral palsy, you know that. But he's not retarded, right? No, Ann, he's not, but let's don't say that. Let's say special, all right? Okay. Mom, will Woody ever get better and be able to walk and talk and get married someday? No, dear, that will never happen. Now sit still and listen, you hear? Yes, ma'am. All right, now let's see where was I? Woody was 8, I reckon, 1956, still an only child. He got to stay home extra that summer from his special sleepaway school in Birmingham to be a part of seeing me off, just like he got to stay the next summer to be the super for when you were born. Brother was carrying on all upset on account of I was going to be in the hospital so long, 6 weeks, and nuns were going to help take care of me. Daddy arranged for the company plane to fly me, but they had to take me from the big house on the hill to the local airport in an ambulance, and Andy Shaffron, Daddy's chauffeur, ran the ambulance service, so he was in charge of it going off just right. Daddy wheeled Woody in his wheelchair onto the wraparound porch. So, are you paying attention? Sit up straight, it'll stretch your spine and make you taller. So that he could see all the goings on. And Buffy, his cocker, was by his chair. They put me on a stretcher in the bedroom and carried me down the stairs, and Andy made sure they were very gentle on account of every jiggle hurt so. The ambulance was backed up to the house as close to the porch as they could park, with its back door open, and we came down the landing, out the front door, and around the house onto the porch to pass Woody, so he could see me one more time as they loaded me in. And he was crying so hard, bless his little heart. I waved bye-bye now, and I told him not to worry, that I loved him and that everything would be just fine. And Daddy kept telling him, buck up, son, buck up. That he was proud of him for being such a big little man. They load you into an ambulance head first, so they can work on you inside if they need. And Woody and I were able to see each other all the way to when they placed me in and they were going to shut the door. And then as I was waving, your brother did an amazing thing. At the top of his lungs, he shouted a word, and the word was, Mother! His mouth made the M, the O, the TH and the ER just as plain as day, and everyone heard it. It was a miracle. It was the only word your brother has ever spoken. And it was adrenaline that helped him do it. Athletes use it too to do better, like you did today in dodgeball. And one day, when you're a Broadway actress, you'll need adrenaline too. It'll calm your nerves before you go on. Don't you know, when that doctor released me, he said in that dreadful Pittsburgh accent, but Mom, I like Pittsburgh accents, I said. All right, don't interrupt. He said, Martha, next time I see you, you'll be pregnant. Every time a young wife goes through this, next thing I know, she's expecting. That was me, right, Mom? You were expecting me? Yes, Miss Ann, that was you, Lord help us. Brother wanted a baby sister so much, he conjured you. And that's why we call you Woody's Order. Remember how I wrote that on the very first picture they took of you at the hospital? Yes, ma'am, I love that picture. It's the darndest thing. Everyone we ever knew named Ann thought you were named after them. But it was really for Woody. It begins with an open vowel and ends in a consonant. An easy word to say in case. In case he can never say it again, right? Yes, Ann. In case he gets another burst of adrenaline again. I actually sat still for a moment and thought about this. Mother had turned to put her mixing bowl to soak and wipe the sparkly formica counter. As she turned back, I was looking at the scab on my knee where I had fallen and ground cinders right into the skin. Ann Tallman, don't you even think about picking that scab. I see you. It's bad enough you picked the chicken pox on your forehead, and now you will have to have them fixed when you're a movie star. I put Vaseline on them and made you wear gloves at night, and you still scratched. Now run and get the Bactine. Quick, quick like a bunny, and I'll time you, but don't jump. Okay, but Mom, I was thinking, it must be so hard to be Woody, even for a whole day, let alone a whole life. Yes, dear, she said, and I noticed the twinkle in her eyes was beginning to go dim, like my Girl Scout flashlight when the batteries are low. Yes, dear. Now scoot!
So thank you so much, Ann Tallman, for bringing our Tin Roof Project here at Tales from the South. In your story, your mom mentions the story of one of your great-great aunties, Rosa or Mamie or Willow, throwing a trunk of silver out the second-story window all by herself when the Yankees were invading. So are there other stories like this that your family has passed down?
Yes. I come from just a family of storytellers, mm-hmm. and both sides, my mother and her people and my dad and his family. And if my father were alive right now, he'd be 102. So his stories skip generations that most people my age didn't necessarily hear. So his stories were about the Great Depression and World War II, mm-hmm. and he was in the CCC. Because he graduated college in 1931, and he used to say that there were no jobs to be had, only bread lines. So he became a commander in the CCC and helped build Skyline Drive. And he used to tell stories about how they used to have to lock up the vanilla extract at night. And my grandmother, my mother's mother, was a dietitian in the 20s, and she was one of the original cake mix testers. Isn't that neat? And she was head dietitian of a whole school district in Bessemer, Alabama in the 20s. And they would send her these cake mixes, and then she would test them and then write reports and send them back. And she's the one who actually started the ideas of, like, putting a box of Jell-O, or putting a box of pudding in, and then mayonnaise and oil. And she used to call it doctoring up a cake. She never made a cake that she... And so she would tell lots of stories about how she would doctor a cake and make it better. And but I think the stories that really resonated with me right now are the ones from the Depression. My father's parents took in 11 boarders, and you did everything yourself. You know, you grew your own food, you made your own food, you had your own chickens, and my grandmother made the wine for the church, and there was always a little left over. And it was during Prohibition. So there were stories about Prohibition. Yeah, just, and I started to write them down when I was in high school. And I write them down. And my father got Alzheimer's disease. So as soon as I knew that he had that, I started tape recording him, telling his stories, I've just been writing them down, and now I'm starting to tell them.
That's wonderful. You were able to capture him and remember him that way.
Yeah, he loved to hold court and tell stories. So. And he loved to tell them over and over. And, you know, he'd say, "Have I told y'all the story about the?" And we'd go, "Yes." And then he'd go, "Well, what happened? What?" You know, and then he'd just launch into it, and my mother would say, "Oh, here we go."
In your story tonight, your mom has those old wives' tales. One was, "Stop picking your nose right this instant, it'll make your nostrils big," mm-hmm. "and you won't be a movie star." And, "Sit up straight, it'll stretch your spine and make you taller." So yeah. Do you remember other old wives' tales from, like these from your childhood, either from your parents or from mm-hmm. other people?
Well, there was always the "don't run with scissors," "don't run with pencils or sticks." It's a wonder she didn't say "don't run while picking your nose." "Don't cross your eyes or they'll stay that way."
Okay.
"Don't go out with wet hair or you'll catch a cold." But a lot of hers were warnings, because I guess she knew I was going to be an actress decades before I did. And the whole thing about being tall was because she used to say the sign of a great actor is that they look larger on stage than they really are in real life. And she used to tell me about really famous actors who are actually very tiny people, but you never knew it. And then the other, well, it's a story also. My dad went to Virginia Military Institute, and my father-in-law went to West Point during the Depression and the beginning of the war. And a lot of the boys, to make sure that they would make the height requirement, they would stretch themselves, which is like the, you know, stand up straight so you'll be taller. And my dad used to hang from a chin-up bar to, like, stretch himself to make sure he was tall enough for VMI. And my father-in-law would put something on the floor just out of reach and then keep trying to touch it, because he figured that would make him tall enough for West Point.
Did it work?
They both got in.
Well, there you go.
And they both graduated.
So we only see your brother Woody in the flashback in the story before you were born in this story. However, we get the impression that you two were very close. So what was your relationship with Woody like? And what have you learned from him over the years? He's still alive now, correct?
Yes. Well, evidently my relationship with my brother started way before I was born because he was an only child and severely cerebral palsied, but very bright and expressive. He's nonverbal. And he got it in his head as like an eight-year-old that he had to have a sibling in case anything ever happened to my parents. He didn't want to be all alone in the world. You know, I'm sure I'm not the only sibling conjured that way. But so he would go on what my dad called the campaign, and he would touch my mother's belly, and he would touch my father's groin, and then, like, wave his hands. And he was relentless, and my mother had to have 3 months bed rest before I was born, and I was a cesarean. And it's really true. Like, back in the 50s, they would take these black and white pictures of the baby, and on the bottom, my mother wrote, "Woody's Order." And I was always referred to as Woody's Order, and that he conjured me. And as a child, I sort of embraced it as like a fairy tale, you know. And he's 10 years older than me now. I mean, and he was like a doll that I couldn't wait to help take care of and, you know, just adore. The amazing thing is that it was like being told your destiny, just assigned your destiny, really. But it was just a fairy tale. But then what happened was that my mother was killed in a car crash when I was 20, and he was 30. And within a few years, my dad had the onset of Alzheimer's. And so it was like the destiny that had been like a fairy tale. I had to accept it. I had to embrace it and really live it. And it wasn't always easy, you know, it was hard. But he and I are very, very close. We're inseparable team. And I tell people that even though I'm an actress, he's the star of my life. He looks like George Clooney in a wheelchair now, you know, he's like gorgeous and really irreverent. And I did a play once with Elizabeth Taylor. I played her daughter, and she was so thrilled to meet Woody that she made a big deal out of it and, like, went and met him after the play, and she bent down to give him a kiss, and his head flopped right into her cleavage. And then it snapped up immediately, but... And from then on, she would say, "And how is that Randy brother of yours?" And so we're really a team. I couldn't live without him. He helps me a lot. He's very wise, and he can nod yes and shake no. So. My parents made up a game early on called 20 Questions, where you had to phrase everything in a question, like on Jeopardy, and then he would talk. And now, you know, they have computers and everything, but we still talk like that a lot, you know. And people think I have ESP because I can read his mind, but I just know him really well.
All right, well, we have a few minutes left here for audience questions.
I'm just curious to know about, with your experience as an actress, can you give us an example of the different types of dialects of English that you are able to use, or some stories about that?
Yeah, sure. Oh, that's interesting. Because my mother was from Birmingham, Alabama. My father was from Charlottesville, Virginia, and raised in Richmond. But since I was 6 months old, we lived in Pittsburgh, which has an amazingly distinct accent. And by the time I was five, first grade, I made up my mind that I did not want an accent. But I loved to mimic them. So I would mimic my mother, and my dad just had a very
you know, Virginia accent, and he'd say host and tomato and aunt, you know. And then Pittsburgh, I would do Pittsburgh because our housekeeper, who is still like a second mother to me, named Millie Critchlow, and I used to call her Mildew. She has the best Pittsburgh accent, so I would do her. And it's like, well, if you're from Pittsburgh, you say, we're going downtown. Hey, did you watch them Steelers on the game? We're going to ride the incline up and down Mount Washington. And red out your, like in Pittsburgh, they say, red up your room, which means to get it ready, clean it up. And my brother lives in Allentown, Pennsylvania, so that's Pennsylvania Dutch. So a lot of times they'll lilt at the end of the sentence, like they'll go, so, what are you going to do tonight? You know, you're going to be on Tales from the South. What? How's that? You know, and like, so I just have always been a mimic. Oh, my first husband was from Providence, Rhode Island, so... I used to do that, which is also like South Boston, which would be like, I'm looking for a job. They always say job, Southie. So I've studied accents my whole life, but I basically taught myself standard English, whether I even knew I was doing it or not. So my acting teachers... we're glad, because a lot of times actors will have to undo their accent, you know, and I didn't. I was a clean slate. Oh, in West Virginia, West Virginia has a really special accent. So everywhere I go, I tape recorders, and I'll listen to people's accents and tape them. And back when we had answering machines with the cassettes, I would keep all the people's messages and study their accents. So I really appreciate having grown up with many accents and not having been too confused.
First of all, I thought you were wonderful and adorable at the same time, and just really heartwarming. I thought your story was fabulous. And I wanted to know if you had studied writing, or did it you just start writing from your journal? I mean, have you, you know... people edit your work, or is just because of your dramatic sense, do you just kind of know what fits?
I didn't study writing until the early 90s when I was living in LA and I joined a writing group, but I've always written down the family stories, verbatim if I could, you know, like since middle school even, I would write them down. And I think because of what you asked about accents and dialects, I'm a singer, and I think it's musical that I just could hear dialogue. And now that I am a writer, I feel funny calling myself a writer, but I'm a storyteller. I think I understand dialogue because I'm an actress, and now I work with people who help me edit, and I'm in groups, and we read aloud. But the best way that I've learned is when I write a story, I read it out loud to myself, and if it doesn't ring true, I'll know immediately. And the other way to make sure you're ringing true is read to children, because boy, if you're being fake or something, they'll let you know. And I've begun to read them to my brother. He's a good judge. I'm taking a wonderful class with a man named Matt Hoverman about how to write a solo show. And so I'm hoping that maybe I can put my stories into a one-woman show. So my joke is that I'm writing a one-woman show, and I just hope there's something in it for me.
Who is like the most approachable or amazing actor or actress that's affected your life?
Elizabeth Taylor. She and I joined Equity together, the Actors Union. There have been many, But I would have to say that she was an amazingly wonderful, warm person. And my mother had just died when I got that show. And she really took me under her wing in a maternal way. Elizabeth. Oh, and when she passed away recently, people treated me like I had lost my mother. You know, like I got all kinds of emails and calls and people telling me how sorry they were, and because they thought of her as like a second mother to me. And she was very generous. But she was also a little bit, you know, it was the first time she'd ever been on stage. So she would ask me for help too, you know, which was amazing. She played a lot of jokes on people on stage too, so I should write all those down.
So how about our story and storyteller tonight? Thank you so much, Ann Tolman, for being on our Tin Roof Project here at Tales from the South. Thank you to our live audience, and thank you to UALR Public Radio. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
They say it's a lack of communication. I need some time to get away. No more meaningful conversation. I feel our love is slipping away. Fears and these feelings I've held inside, and I'm getting too old to fight it. I tell you the truth, sometimes wear a thin disguise, and I'm getting too old to hide it. I'm getting too old to fight. And look at the mess we've undertaken. Silence says all we want to say. No more meaningful conversation. I feel our love is slipping away. And all these fears and these feelings I've held inside, and I'm getting too old to hide it. I tell you the truth, sometimes I wear a thin disguise, and I'm getting too old to hide it. And I'm getting too old to fight. And all these fears and these feelings I've held inside, and I'm getting too old to fight.
Tales from the South is presented by William F. Lehman, a public library. Additional support provided by the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, AY Magazine, UALR's Department of Rhetoric and Writing, the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, and the Oxford American. Live sound and studio assistance provided by Infrared Studio in North Little Rock. More at InfraredStudioProductions.com. Our bluesman is Mark Simpson. Our stage art is by V.L. Cox. Our production engineer is Jay Jones, and our executive producer and host is Paula Morrell. You too can experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. We're now traveling throughout Arkansas and the South, bringing Tales to your community. Details on hosting a live show, our schedule, and ticket information can be found at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern-style storytelling alive, and we'll see you next week on Tales from the South.